This is Henry Simon bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed.
The German invasion and subsequent occupation of Denmark during World War II has been a subject of many books and films. Tales of heroism and courage in the face of despair, and of the fierce underground combat waged by the Danes against the tyranny of the Nazi regime. And yet, I imagine, there must be many more stories that have never been told. Stories such as one which I'm about to relate. To do so, I must take you back to an evening in the March of 1942, to a small house in the village of Koldenstedt. The windows are closed and there is snow on the roof, reflecting the glow of a clear moon. All is quiet. Nothing stirs. Abruptly, the silence is broken by the rumbling approach of a motor vehicle, and a moment later it takes shape in the form of a heavy military truck. Outside the house it comes to a grinding standstill, and five soldiers climb out. Led by a sergeant, they march to the front door, their jackboots crunching on the snow-covered ground.
Company! Halt! Aufmachen da drinnen! Wir wissen, dass ihr da seid! Wenn diese Tür nicht in 3 Sekunden geöffnet ist, befehle ich meinen Soldaten, sie einzubrechen. 1, 2... Ah, und nicht zu früh. Ihr Dänen wollt nie lernen, dass wir das im Ernst meinen.
Ja, ich tele, ich gedüsk.
Was?
Sie sagt, dass sie nicht Deutsch spricht, Herr Feldwebel.
Eine ungebildete Bäuerin. Français? Parlez-vous français?
Nein.
Herr Gott, noch einmal. Englisch?
Yes, a little.
So. Die blöde Gans spricht kein Deutsch, aber sie spricht Englisch. Sie sollte wirklich mehr Verstand haben.
Why do you come here?
You are Frau Kronborg?
Yes.
You have a daughter, Christina?
Yes.
And your husband? Where is he?
He was taken away.
Hört ihr sie? Sie sagte, er ist verschleppt worden. Why was he taken away?
I do not know.
I think you do. But no matter. It is you and your daughter we are concerned with. You will pack a bag and come with us, the two of you.
My daughter is not here.
No?
She has gone to live with my sister in Odense.
Oh, come now. You can do better than that.
It is the truth, I swear.
We will see. Gefreiter, nehmen Sie 2 Männer und durchsuchen Sie das Haus.
Jawohl, Herr Feldwebel. Katz, Jodl, vorwärts.
Please, I do not want trouble.
I have instructed my men to search the house. If your daughter is here, she will be found. If not, other arrangements will be made.
But why? What have we done?
You are being recruited for labor in the Fatherland, together with many others like you.
Sent to Germany?
Do not look so distressed. It is a great honor. You should be proud to enter the service of the Führer.
But Christina, she is only 14 years old.
A good age for a girl. Who knows, perhaps she will find herself a German husband.
God forbid.
What? I will never understand you people. We came here as friends to help you.
Did we ask you to come?
There would have been no trouble if you had welcomed us. Our orders were to treat you well. To see that no one was harmed. And what do? To repay our kindness? You spit in our faces. You do all in your power to make us enemies. So now we are forced to adopt harsher measures, to take drastic steps. Not because we wish to do so, but because you have made us. All this you have brought on yourselves.
Entschuldigen Sie, Herr Feldwebel.
Ja?
Sie spricht die Wahrheit. Es ist niemand hier.
Sind Sie überzeugt?
Wir haben jeden Raum durchsucht.
Geht in Ordnung. It seems I owe you an apology, Frau Kronborg. The corporal tells me there is no sign of your daughter.
I have told you she is with my sister.
That is very fortunate for her and for you. You will go now and pack a suitcase. I can allow you 5 minutes. Gehen Sie mit Ihr Gefreiter und sehen Sie zu, dass Sie keinen Unsinn versucht.
Jawohl, Herr Feber. Kommen Sie.
One day you will be sorry for this. There will be a reckoning. And you will pay the price of what you have done. Every last one of you.
And so it was a few minutes later, Kirsten Kronberg was led from the house to the waiting truck. The soldiers climbed in behind her, and at an order from the sergeant, they drove off in a cloud of exhaust smoke, leaving nothing in their wake except a patch of footmarks in the snow. Such was the prelude to a case which was first brought to my notice some 7 years later in the spring of 1949, when I was visited here in my office at the Missing Persons Bureau by Kirsten Kronberg herself. At first glance, I estimated her age as between 50 and 60. But I was later to learn that she was only 43. Her hair was quite grey, and her features were drained of all expression, as was her voice, a flat, lusterless monotone.
The next day I was put on a train for Germany. We were herded together, dozens of us, and taken to Munich to work in factories. For 3 years we were Nazi slaves, working 15-16 hours a day, or just enough food to keep us alive. Then, a few months before the end, they sent us to prison camps.
From which you were finally liberated by the Americans.
By that time, most of us were too tired and sick to care. For myself, I had no wish to go on living. If it had not been for the children, I would have taken my life long before.
Children?
Christina and Frederick.
I didn't realize you had a son as well.
Yes.
Where was he when the Germans came?
In the house.
But I understood you to say that...
They were both in the house. Hiding in the cellar. We had been expecting trouble, you see, because of my husband, Stefan.
He'd been arrested?
3 weeks before, by the Gestapo.
For doing what exactly?
He was a schoolmaster. A picture of Adolf Hitler was hung in his classroom. He took it down and burnt it. It was foolish of him. 2 days later, he was taken away.
And?
Same week, I heard from a friend that he had been shot. I could not believe it.
Was the report verified?
Much later. By two men who had witnessed the execution.
So you left the children alone in the house?
I had no choice. If they had found Christina, she would have been taken with me. That would have been too much.
She was only 14, you say?
Yes.
And your son?
12.
What became of them?
I do not know. I never saw or heard of them again. That is why I have come to you. I want them traced if they are still alive.
You've had no word of them at all?
None.
I take it you went back home to Köln-Stedt after your release from the prison camp?
Yes, I went back, but not to my home. I had no home. It had been burnt down. In the village, I asked questions about the children, but no one could help me. They had not been seen since that night.
But what about your sister in Odense? Did you check with her?
She died of pneumonia 4 years ago.
I see. And her family?
She was a widow. She had no children.
Parents?
Both dead.
Have you any living relatives at all?
There is no one.
Where have you spent the last 3 years?
I have been working in Copenhagen. It was there I heard of your organization, so when I have saved the money, I come to you.
Which means they may have returned to Köln-Stedt without your knowing.
I left word with the people in the village. It was all I could do. I had no money. There was no work.
Can you think of anywhere they might have gone to after you left them?
No.
But surely two children, they can't have just disappeared. They must have turned to somebody. Wasn't there a Danish protection officer in the area?
In Viborg, 10 miles away, but not in Kolenstedt.
Did you make inquiries in Viborg?
Only through friends. It is no use. They know nothing.
Did they have any money?
No.
Food?
Very little.
Would it have been possible for them to have escaped across to England or Sweden?
Possible, perhaps.
But not probable.
They were so young, so helpless. And the Germans were everywhere.
You don't, of course, know for sure that they weren't picked up.
I am sure of nothing. Except that if they are alive, I must find them.
Quite.
You will help me, Mr. Simon.
Well, I can't make any promises. I shall certainly do all that I can.
You are very kind.
Now, let's see. Christina would be 21 now.
Old enough to have children of her own.
And Frederick would be 19.
I doubt if I would recognize them more than me. It has been so long, and I have changed so much since we were together. It seems an eternity ago.
You say that you were expecting the Germans when they came.
I knew they were recruiting labor. I knew also that Christina and I, being the family of Stefan, would be high on their list.
So when you heard the truck drive outside, you hurried them down to the cellar?
We had prepared ourselves for such an emergency.
Why did you hide them both? They wouldn't have taken the boy too, would they?
I did not know what they would do, but I was determined to take no chances.
It must have been extremely harrowing for you, waiting for the axe to fall, so to speak.
Every second of every hour, it was a nightmare. Often we would hear them passing in their trucks. We would watch through the windows, praying they would not stop. The nights were the worst. After dark, we did not dare close our eyes, for we knew well how dearly the Nazis loved to catch people asleep, to drag them from their beds and pelt them with snow. Like wolves, Mr. Simon, they taunted their victims. And always they came by night.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
It was a pathetic tale. A mother separated from her children 7 years before, living only for news of their whereabouts, not knowing if they were dead or alive. It wasn't the first case of this kind we dealt with, nor was it to be the last. Yet I found it curiously fascinating. Two children alone in an enemy-occupied country, without money, without food, thrown entirely upon their own resources, and then left to fend for themselves. Where had they gone? Who had they turned to? And why had there been no news of them for so long?
There's only one logical answer, Chief. They're dead. They must be.
In which case, of course, it's our job to find out where they died. And when.
Yeah, well, if you ask me, our best bet's to try and contact whoever was the protection officer for the area.
Well, the nearest one was stationed in Viborg, 10 miles further north.
All right, let's head off from there.
My dear Hunter, with what?
A protection officer.
We have no idea who he was.
Well, it shouldn't be too difficult to find out. Some of the locals would know. I mean, the thing is, if these kids were smart, they'd figure on getting over to England or Sweden. Now, that being the case, they'd know to... P.O. would be the best person to help him.
True. Unfortunately, however, our client's purse strings are somewhat limited. She can't afford to have you gallivanting all over Europe on the off chance.
Well, does she have enough to cover my return fare?
She has £140.
What are you worried about, Chief? For that, I could spend a weekend in the Rio Riviera. You just leave it to me, man. I've been halfway around the globe and back for less.
It is a fact that Hunter has the most amazing knack of making a little money go a long way. Which is why I prefer, whenever possible, to have him handle what we call the limited budget cases. In this instance, his reasoning was sound enough. During the war in the various German-occupied countries, protection officers had been appointed by certain patriot bodies to offer assistance to the needy, especially the wives and children of fallen or imprisoned patriots. It seemed quite likely, therefore, that Christina and Frederick Kronberg might have sought aid from just such a source. And it was to check on this possibility that Hunter journeyed to the Danish town of Viborg 2 days later. As anticipated, he had very little trouble in establishing the identity of the former protection officer in question, one Anna Hauntor. The task of locating her, however, was a good deal more complicated, and 5 days slipped by before he finally caught up with her at her new home in Ebenrad, near the German border. A tall, blonde woman in her late 40s, she spoke fluent English, and bore very little trace of the strain which she must have undergone during the war.
I am sorry you've had such difficulty finding me, Mr. Hunter. For the past 3 years, I have been moving about the country a great deal, organizing charity functions and the like. But now I intend to stay put.
Well, that's fair enough. After all the good work you've done, I guess you've earned a rest.
Oh, I have done my share, no more. But I am most interested in the story you have told me. Their name was Kronborg, you say?
Yeah, Christina and Frederick. As a matter of fact, I have a photograph of them here.
Oh.
Taken 1939. They're both pretty good-looking kids, especially the girl. Hard to forget, I'd imagine.
Oh, there are so many homeless children. Oh, no. Surely it could not be.
Well, you recognize them?
Christina and Frederick, but of course their names had escaped me, but the faces never. It comes back to me now. Their parents had been taken by the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
They came to me for food and shelter. The boy was very ill, I remember. I kept him in bed for many days.
I see, and then?
It was decided that they should go to Sweden.
Mm.
I had a number of contacts there. Families who'd offered to provide homes for Danish refugees.
Well, did you have any a particular family in mind for these two?
Olaf Grundel. He and his wife, they had a farm in Gothenburg. It was to them I sent the children.
Sent the children?
Oh, they would pass them on to others.
Oh, I see, yeah. They still living in Gothenburg?
That I cannot tell you. You will have to go there yourself and find out.
Yes, yeah, dear, just taking note of that. Olaf, what was his name again?
Grundel.
Grundel. What was the process of getting the kids across to him? I mean, that must have called for quite a bit of organization.
No, it did, believe me. From Weiburg, the journey was made in three stages.
Mm-hmm.
To Arlborg, Friedrichshafen, then across by fishing boat to Gothenburg.
Did they go alone, or did they have escorts?
Oh, with escorts, always. All the children. Alone, they would not have survived.
Mm. Hazardous venture.
In the winter, highly so. A venture that many times led to death.
With increased confidence, now that he had a definite trail to follow, Hunter traveled by train to Friedrichshafen, crossing by ferry to Gothenburg on the Swedish coast. His luck held, and he was directed by the very first person he asked, a dockside storekeeper, to the farm of Olaf Grundahl, on the outskirts of the town. Grundahl himself proved to be a giant of a man. 6 feet 8 inches tall, he was built in proportion, and he had the weather-beaten face and features of one who had lived and thrived on an active, open-air existence. His English, although limited, was passable, and he spoke slowly in a deep voice.
Hey, Christina and Frederick Kronberg.
Yes, right.
Names I do not remember, but the faces. Yeah, yeah. Always the faces I remember.
Well, they were sent here by Anna Helmtrov.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's a good woman.
Could you kind of recall what happened to
them? Well, they come to me, find them place to go.
What place?
He's in Stockholm. He's friend of my father.
Now, wait a minute, I get this straight. You sent him to Stockholm to a friend of your father's?
Yeah. His name Jørnsen, Lars Jørnsen.
Mm-hmm.
His wife and 2 children of himself. So I sent him 2 more, yeah?
Do you have the address?
Address?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, where does he live?
Oh, in Stockholm.
I know, but where in Stockholm? I mean, what part?
I wrote in book. You wait, I get, yes?
Yes, well, yeah.
My English is not so good, I think.
Another bother you compared to my Swedish. It's sensational.
Two hours later, having obtained the address of the Jorgensen family from Olaf Grundahl, Hunter boarded a train to Stockholm, arriving in that very city early the following morning. Outside the central railway station, he hailed a cab, and duly proceeded to the given address in the outlying suburb of Sundsvall. It was a large home, set well back from the street, and screened from public view by a very high brick wall. In answer to his ring, the front door was opened by a fat, jolly-looking man, who made Hunter think of Santa Claus without a beard.
Mr. Jorgensen?
Yeah.
Well, glad to know you. My name's Hunter. I'm from London, Missing Persons Bureau.
Yeah?
Jorgensen led the way to his study, where, sitting at a huge tumbler of milk, he listened intently as the agent explained the reason for his presence.
So I get the address from Grundahl, up to train for Stockholm, and, well, here I am.
But this is, strange.
Yeah?
Yeah, strange, isn't it? First, to set your main address, let me tell you that Christina and Frederick are both alive and well.
They are.
You know the story of how they come here and why, of course. Yeah. But as much you do not know.
Well, I'm mainly interested in knowing where they are right now.
4 years ago, I made inquiries through private channels, and I was informed that their murder was staged.
No, well, that I can believe. I mean, the records got pretty messed up. All sorts of people were reported dead who weren't.
So it would seem. At the time, however, there was no doubt in my mind that the information was good.
Uh-huh.
Christina and Frederick were also convinced that it was true.
Well, that explains why they never went home, or tried to find her.
Yeah, what you see is right.
Mm. Well, whereabouts are they now?
Are they in Kornhaven?
In where?
Kornhaven.
Copenhagen.
Oh, Copenhagen. Well, that's where she was a little week or so ago.
Oh, they did not know that, of course.
Oh. What are they doing there?
Well, Christina, she, you know, she's studying to be a nurse.
Oh. And Frederick?
Oh, Frederick, he's in business. The rat told me every week, both of them.
Well, how long were they living here?
4 years. During which time, or late, you know, I came to look on them as I did my own children.
Well, do you have an address where I could kind of contact them?
Sure. But there is more to tell, however.
Hmm?
More to tell, as I said, you know. Frederick is in business.
What kind of business?
They run a sort of form, what you call it, delivery business.
Oh, delivery service. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Did you say they?
He and his partner.
Well, he's in partnership. Huh?
Yeah? And you never guess who it is.
This stage, I wouldn't dare try. Who?
Stefan Kornberg. His father.
It was now Hunter's turn to listen in somewhat stunned silence, as Jorgensen went on to explain that the information he'd gained in 1946, while alleging the death of Kirsten Kronberg, had at the same time led him to the discovery that Stefan Kronberg, who had supposedly been shot by the Gestapo in 1942, was in fact in an Allied hospital, recovering from the effects of 3 years in a German concentration camp. He had subsequently been brought to Stockholm by Jorgensen, where he was reunited with his children. Later still, backed financially by Jorgensen, the three had gone to Copenhagen, where father and son had launched themselves out in business. Little dreaming, of course, that not only was Kirsten still alive, but he was working at a job in that same city.
So now, Mr. Hunter, you can see what I mean when I said it was strange.
Strange? It's an understatement, Mr. Jorgensen. I call it miraculous.
I think perhaps I'd like to come with you to Copenhagen and see how they look when they hear the news. It will really be something to see their faces.
Well, it's Mrs. Kronberg's face I'm looking forward to seeing. See, for almost 8 years, she's been a childless widow.
Yeah.
And now, just like that,
yeah.
She's about to get news that she's not only still a mother, but a wife as well.
Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
It was an incredible twist of fate that had kept the Kronberg family apart for so long, mother and children, husband and wife, each believing the other to be dead. Yet it is no less credible a story than others I could recount on exactly the same theme. Following the war, of course, the whole of Europe was in such chaos, and reports of death were so very commonplace that it is understandable how such a mix-up could occur. I often wonder how many other families there are, like the Kronbergs, who have been less fortunate than they, and remained divided, perhaps never to meet again. Stefan and Kirsten Kronberg once more have their own home. Not in Koldenstedt, as before, but in Copenhagen, where Stefan has returned to his former profession of school teaching, leaving Frederick to carry on the delivery business alone. And as a postscript, I might add that Christina has since qualified as a nurse. And now, this is Henry Simon inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.